Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today I am so pleased to have John Curran as a guest. But John, who's known as a historian, this man has been on my show before, but I got so excited when I found out that he had a book on Agatha Christie, who is one of my favorite murder mystery writers, and Hercule Poirot and Miss Marple are must-sees in the Sebo household. John, welcome, and thank you for being on the show today. You're in Ireland, are you not?
I'm in Dublin, yes, where it is now 11 p.m. at night.
Yes, so you are the sturdy, stalwart Irishman that's staying up to deal with a show in America, so I appreciate that.
I'm happy to talk about Agatha Christie at any hour of the day or night.
Oh, I can imagine. Now, John, you have just been involved with writing for so long, but you are a literary advisor to Agatha Christie's estate, and you actually edited the official Agatha Christie newsletter and acted as a consultant to the National Trust during the restoration of a home, the Greenway House, Christy Devon's home. And you just really made an amazing discovery. Tell us what it was, and how in the world were you fortunate enough to find what you found?
Well, it went back a few years prior to that when I traveled to Calgary in Canada to see the first ever performance of an Agatha Christie play. And while there, I met her grandson, Matthew. And during the week, we both did quite a bit of media, radio and television and newspaper interviews, and we bonded. So when we came back, Matthew invited me to visit Greenway House, because at that stage, it still belonged to the family. It hadn't been handed over to the state. So I went to Greenway for a weekend and spent most of that weekend in a room at the top of the stairs in Greenway House, which housed all of Agatha Christie's papers, her letters, her manuscripts, her typescripts, her contracts, her theatre programs, film posters, and a brown cardboard box of notebooks, 73 notebooks. So I visited the house again shortly afterwards, and then it was that the National Trust asked me to undertake the task of boxing up and cataloguing all of her papers, because the house needed major restoration and everything had to be removed from the house. So I quite happily went and spent a further month that summer, more or less entirely in that room at the top of the stairs, boxing up and cataloguing all of Agatha Christie's papers.
I was so intrigued with your material on her, because the way her mind worked with her mysteries, she had so many integral plots, you might say, that dovetailed and so frequently ended up with a result that you would never have imagined.
Yes,
and
that
she was just amazing.
The secret of her success, because while her stories may seem straightforward when you're reading them, it isn't until you get to the last chapter that you realize that she had something else in mind all along, and she fooled you almost from the first chapter. And that is why, 40 years after her death, people all over the world are still reading Agatha Christie, and I'm quite convinced they will be reading her in 40 years from now as well.
Absolutely. Now, let's go through certain sections in your book, because in your dealing with these papers, we had to step back in time all the way to 1931. And how old was Agatha Christie in 1931?
Well, it's easy to work out her age, because her age is always 10 years older than the year. So in 1931, she was 41.
So she was in really a very prime part of her life. Now, how long had she been writing, and how long had she been published by 1931?
Roughly 10 years. Her first book was published in 1920, and oddly enough, it was published in the U.S. a few months before it was published in the U.K. But she began writing it during World War One, so it was roughly 5 years from the time she began it to the time it appeared on the bookshelf, because, believe it or not, it was rejected by quite a few publishers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I believe it.
So, at the time, she wasn't particularly worried about it because she only wrote it as a pastime. She had no idea that it was going to become her life's work.
Mm-hmm.
So by 1930-31, she had been writing for 10 years and she had had 10 books published. But it wasn't until 1930 that she really got into her stride and began to write the type of books that now everyone associates with the name Agatha Christie. During her first 10 years, quite a few of her books were light-hearted thrillers and a couple of volumes of short stories. But from roughly 1930 and the appearance of Miss Marple in The Murder at the Vicarage, and from then until roughly the middle to the end of the 1940s, she produced all of the famous titles that everyone is familiar with and on which her fame rests. So ABC Murders, Murder at the Vicarage, And Then There Were None, Murder is Easy, Murder on the Orient Express, Evil Under the Sun, all these famous titles that will still be read 100 years from now.
I'm going to quote exactly from your book where you say, 73 notebooks reposed in an unpretentious brown cardboard box at the bottom of a cupboard. Notebooks in various shapes, sizes, colors, and states of preservation covered with sprawling and often illegible handwriting in pencil, fountain pen, and biro. No chronology, no order, no method, but a splendid profusion of imagination. Now, that's what you said. Now, here is a woman that obviously loves puzzles, and she's putting together these scripts and these personalities, and her mind has this adaptability to time and space of thought that's just fascinating.
Yes, and even though I've spent the last 5 years immersed in her notebooks and writing, because I've had a second book published, so I'm writing two books about Christie, I'm not sure that I really understand the woman and her mind. I do make the point in the book that I think part of the secret of how she did what she did so well for so long is partly attributable to the fact that she never went to school. Agatha Christie had no formal education in the sense, which, in fairness, would not have been that unusual for a female at the end of the 1800s, which is when she would have been at school-going age. And I think that is part of her secret, because her mind wasn't trained the same way as your mind and my mind have been trained by education from the time that we're four or five. So she taught differently to other people, and that's how I think she was able to do what she did and spring these surprises on people. And going through the notebooks and looking at the chaos of them, it made me realize that even though the notebooks are chaotic, the books are wonderfully cleverly structured and everything clicks neatly into place. But to look at the notebooks, you would never think that was going to happen, because they're completely chaotic in both the sense of the way she wrote them, but also in the fact that one book could be spread over a dozen notebooks.
Mm-hmm.
Or even on one page, she might have ideas for half a dozen stories. So her mind, and I say a splendid profusion of imagination, just about sums it up.
You said that she made a comment. She was on BBC on a program called Close Up, and they asked about her method. And she said she didn't have one.
Yes.
And just what you've described.
I can attest to that, because there's absolutely no method within the notebooks. No, she didn't have a method, and I think that goes back to the point I'm making, that that's how she was able to do what she did, because she didn't think in a structured way until she actually got to the nitty-gritty of finalizing the story. So her mind was able to deal with all of these possible scenarios and then work and polish until she got the story that she wanted. And that's how she was able to do it so well for so long. Because when you break down a lot of her stories into its component parts, usually it's quite simple. It's not, you don't have to be a very highly educated person to appreciate the cleverness of Agatha Christie.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is why she appeals to people like my 10-year-old nephew and my university professor, because she doesn't insult the intelligence of either of those people. And very few writers have managed to do that successfully.
I think of Miss Marple, the characterization of Miss Marple, and it's as if when you think about it, it was an extension. Miss Marple was an extension of herself, a woman that lost the person that she loved in the war and is in a village in a very quaint environment, but is aware the human beings are human beings no matter where they are, and she has this insatiable curiosity.
Yes.
That doesn't allow her to just accept appearances. So Miss Marple, I think, is an extension of her own persona. Would you agree or disagree on that?
Well, I agree to a point. She said, Agatha Christie herself says in her autobiography that she was based partly on her own grandmother, and she says, who was always ready to believe the worst of everybody and was usually proven right, which sounds very cynical, but... So Miss Marple was able to take people at face value, but she wasn't fooled by appearances. So just because someone was very good-looking and charming didn't mean they couldn't turn out in the last chapter to be a murderer, or just because it was a beautiful girl, it didn't mean that she couldn't turn out to be the murderer. And yes, you're absolutely right. Agatha Christie would have had a lot in common with Miss Marple because she was able to look dispassionately at her characters and say, well, I'm going to make you the murderer this time, or I'm going to make the charming little old lady the murderer, or I'm going to make this very distinguished man of business the murderer. So she wasn't fooled by appearances either.
You have a section in your book about detective fiction and how it evolved. And this I found very interesting. Who was the first author in your awareness and in your research that really captured the public's imagination with mystery detective writing?
Well, I think that has to be Conan Doyle and Sherlock Holmes. Now, historically, the first person to write what we now consider a detective story was the American writer Edgar Allan Poe with The Murders in the Rue Morgue, because within that story is the basic template which writers of crime and detection ever since have used. You've got a crime, 99% of the time it's a murder. You have the great detective in capital letters. You have his Watson-type character, his sidekick, who quite often tells us the story. You have the examination of the murder scene. You have the great detective noting things that the police have missed and drawing deductions from them. And then quite often you have somebody wrongly suspected. And ultimately then you have the revelation, which is quite often a surprise to the reader. So The Murders in the Rue Morgue in 1841, they did all of that. And other writers took that template and expanded it and experimented with it ever since. But I think the person who first captured the imagination in an enormous way, and still does to this day, is Sherlock Holmes, Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes.
Well, look at all the new movies that have come out about Sherlock.
Sorry?
Look at all the new movies in the U.S. that have been put out on Sherlock, different adaptations, and people are still just as fascinated today as they were when they originally came out.
Well, Sherlock Holmes is immortal, and there are quite a lot of people out there who think that he actually lived. But at the time that the stories were being published in the UK in the Strand magazine, people were queuing up at the newsagent for the latest installment. And when halfway through the Sherlock Holmes stories, Conan Doyle got tired of Sherlock Holmes and wanted to write other things, he killed him off, and people wore black armbands on the streets because he was an enormously popular figure. So, without doubt, he was the person who first captured the imagination. Now, there were a lot of other writers at the same time, most of them overshadowed by Conan Doyle and Sherlock Holmes. And, of course, when Agatha Christie began writing, Sherlock Holmes was still detecting. Conan Doyle didn't die until 1930, so there was a 10-year period when they were both producing stories. But in fairness to Christie, although she wrote murder mysteries, hers were written more with the point of drawing the reader in to try to solve the mystery for themselves. Mm-hmm. In most of the Conan Doyle stories, certainly the short stories, there is little doubt as to which character is the villain. And mm-hmm. the intrigue is watching Holmes prove that. Whereas with Christie, what she in effect did was say to the reader, I'm going to present you with a group of people. One of them will be a victim, and I defy you to spot who killed that victim until I'm ready to tell you. Now, mm-hmm. Conan Doyle didn't do that. So,
well, she went against all of the rules, from what your research demonstrated. She went against the standard yeah. rules for writing a detective story. She just
did.
Made it up as she went along.
Well, she did. Well, the cleverness of Christie was, while she went against the rules, she still, in a funny way, obeyed the rules. So the rules, which of course were unwritten, and they were only guidelines as distinct from rules, you were told the murderer can't be a character whose thoughts the reader has been allowed share. Now, she broke that wonderfully cleverly, and I won't mention which book it is, but lots of people listening will know which one it is. Then she made everybody the victim. Then she made everybody the murderer. She made the child the murderer. So, as you say, mm-hmm. she broke all of these rules, and yet she still retained the respect and affection of millions of readers the world over.
Well, she truly is an amazing woman. Now, I found it intriguing that with her success, when she had been producing, like you mentioned earlier, a book a year, and she, for nearly, 20 years, she produced two titles a
yes.
year?
Well, in 1934, she produced five titles.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Two volumes of short stories, two novels, and then a novel written under her pseudonym of Mary Westmacott, not a crime novel, a bittersweet love story is the best description. So during the 30s and 40s, she was enormously prolific, and not just prolific, but the standard was enormously high as well.
Mm-hmm. Now,
and one of the reasons that she always claimed that she stopped producing that amount of material was because of the tax situation, because at one stage she was paying 90% tax.
What?
So, yes. And even though she produced a lot of books and she sold millions of copies, for most of her life she was in trouble with the tax authorities, both in the US and in the UK, because of course all of her books were published in the US as well. And that's a long, complicated story, and anyone who is really interested in it should track down either or both of the biographies that have been written about her, one by Janet Morgan and one by Laura Thompson, and they go into that in detail. But she herself said that was one of the reasons that she stopped producing more than one book a year, because the tax people didn't make it worth her while, if you like.
90% tax? I've never
yes.
heard of anything like that.
Yes.
That is amazing.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
Just think of how we'd all feel if we had to pay 90% tax on anything.
Exactly. Yes.
That is
And that's why in the 1950s, she became a limited company. She became Agatha Christie Limited, and she was paid a salary
mm-hmm.
because that improved her tax situation.
Mm-hmm.
But the irony is now, of course, that her work brings in an even bigger income because of all the TV adaptations, which, of course, didn't exist in her day.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine that that's quite a complicated situation because of the family and how they have to manage that and all the royalties and keeping track of all of that. That's quite a big job.
Oh, it is, because all of her books are in print in virtually every country in the world, and there's an ongoing program of televising her works, and this year, for the first time in many years, there will be a cinema version of one of her books, and that hasn't happened for a long time. And of course her plays are produced somewhere in the world every day.
Incredible. I bet she never dreamed she was going to have this kind of an impact on?
Absolutely not, especially in the early days of her career, because at that stage, the type of fiction that she was producing was considered very disposable. Hundreds of writers were producing books of the same type, not of the same quality, I hasten to add, but she, not for one instant did she ever think that 40 years after her death, you and I, for instance, would be having a conversation about her, or that a new book would be published about her, or there would be TV documentaries about her. No, she would be totally taken aback at that.
Tell us how the character Hercule Poirot came together. He reminds me of a penguin, and I know many people say that because of this unique walk. And the series of Hercule Poirot characterizations, and the actor's name that plays him that's so renowned at this time, he just has captured a personality so phenomenally well.
And absolutely. David Suchet has done a wonderful job, and
Thank
he will
you.
Forever be associated with the name of Hercule Poirot and Agatha Christie. And it, the only regret about the whole venture is that Agatha Christie herself didn't live to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the film versions of her books that she did see, by and large, horrified her. She was not happy with the cinema versions of a lot of her books. But she, I like to think that she would completely have approved of David Suchet and his portrayal. And this, the films are made with great attention to the period detail, which is part of the attraction nowadays, of course, because of the nostalgia value. And a decision was taken early on in the series that all of the stories would be set in 1938, regardless of when the book itself was actually published. And that's why they all look the same from the point of view of the clothes and the cars and the houses and the furniture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a good idea because nostalgia is big business.
Well, it's wonderful. There is a, what do you want to say, an ambiance, a persona of dress and style and attitudes, environment. There is so much to that that you are literally, by the visual and the script writing, drawn into that time frame. It's absolutely marvelous.
Oh, they're wonderful. And again, I think they will be viewed for many, many years to come. And I think it will be a brave actor who would take on playing Hercule Poirot anytime soon after David Suchet's definitive portrayal over the last 20 years. And in case your listeners are not aware, but the final stories in the series have just been given the green light, and they will be on our screens hopefully by the end of this year, if not early next year. There are less than half a dozen left to do, and then David Suchet has done all of the Hercule Poirot stories.
I know that at one time he had thought of stepping away from it, but he is so complete in the character that I don't know how he could. There's no one else that I'm aware of that it would even come close.
No, absolutely not. And I think part of the reason for his success is because he has a great respect and affection for the character. It isn't just a meal ticket as far as he's concerned, because I've been lucky enough to meet him. I was actually invited out to Morocco when they were filming Appointment with Death 3 or 4 years ago, and I met him both in his David Suchet persona and in his Poirot persona, because when he's on the set, and I was talking to him in between takes, he talks as Poirot, and he walks as Poirot. It wasn't until later on that evening when we went to dinner that he was David Suchet. So that is why he does such a wonderful job, because he is Poirot when he's doing the film.
Let's talk about Hastings for a minute, because when I first saw him in a Poirot program, I thought, this guy's a nincompoop.
Well, you're not too far from the truth. That's a kind description. And I always feel a bit sorry for poor old Hastings, because it is a thankless task. And, of course, Agatha Christie herself tired of him in the late 1930s and banished him off to live on a farm in Argentina. But the reason that she did that was because the Hastings novels are narrated in the first person. Hastings is telling you the story as I said and I went and I met. And that restricts a writer, because they can only describe scenes where Hastings is present. So Agatha Christie decided that she wanted to be more adventurous in her writing, so Hastings was gotten rid of, and then she told most of the stories from then on in the third person, which meant that she could describe scenes that didn't involve Poirot necessarily. But poor Hastings, yes, he's not the most intelligent of people. But then there's a reason for that as well, because he's telling the story to the reader. It's important that the reader should understand everything that's going on. So if Hastings appears from time to time, as you say, to be a nincompoop or to be not very quick on the uptake, that is in case there's a reader reading it who isn't very quick on the uptake, and Hastings, as the narrator, has to explain Poirot's brilliant deductions to him in words of one syllable. So it's not really fair to be dismissive of Hastings, because he's doing his job very well. And of course, at the time, most crime fiction of that type was narrated by somebody in the first person, because of course the vast majority of the Sherlock Holmes stories are told by Watson. So crime fiction needed a Watson, as he became to be known as. But Agatha Christie tired of him, and probably did consider him too much of a nincompoop.
Well, there is so much vibrancy to what she does. And
yes,
having learned that all of the series are in the 1930s time frame, there was a different attitude socially about certain protocols, and all of this is brought out when they do the programs, and many of us today watching it would say, you have got to be kidding, that's what they did in the 1930s? But it is true,
I know.
And I think this is marvelous.
Well, it is, because nostalgia is wonderful to watch or to read about. Now, whether we'd all like to go back and live in those times, it might be wonderful if you lived on the right side, but if you didn't, life probably wasn't so great. But I think the decision to set them all in the 30s was the right one. But even nowadays, reading the books, sometimes you're pulled up short by something that somebody says, which nowadays we wouldn't dream of saying or thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But then, that's life, isn't it? I mean, you can't, I don't think that you can change books to make them fit in with modern politically correct thinking, because then they're no longer the books that that author wrote.
Correct. I agree with that. And I think we're doing a disservice to the author when we try to modernize it. It's like taking certain operas and trying to make them into a modern-day dress.
Yeah.
And I want to say, excuse me, this was taking place, you know, in the 1500s. Why in the world are you putting somebody in a Nazi uniform? Doesn't make sense.
Absolutely. And I think I know which one you're talking about, because I've seen that production as well.
Absolutely
agree. And in fact, during her lifetime, Agatha Christie wouldn't even allow abridged versions of her novels be done for schools, because she said, no, that's the book I wrote, take it or leave it. And I think she was right to stick to her guns like that.
All in all, how many books did she write? How many, and let's break them down. Miss Marple, how many stories were written about Miss Marple? And
there
how many about Hercule?
There are a dozen Marple novels and 20 Marple short stories. And in my new book, Murder in the Making, there is a 13th Miss Marple story, in the sense that it's a different version of a story that we think we know already. Poirot's bibliography is a bit more complicated, because she rewrote some of the stories and called them by different names, and she expanded stories and changed the names. But overall, she wrote 80-odd novels, and I'm saying 80-odd because it gets very complicated between the US and the UK, because short stories were collected in different volumes. So they had different titles in America, and they mightn't have the same contents of short stories. But you're safe enough to say 85 crime novels and short stories. She wrote 6 novels as Mary Westmacott, as I said, bittersweet love stories. And the other factor that people tend to forget is Agatha Christie is also a very, very successful dramatist, the only crime novelist to be a successful dramatist. And she wrote 14, 15 full-length plays and half a dozen one-act plays. Now, my next project in about 2 years' time is a study of her plays, because quite a lot of people, and I know this from going to conventions and talking to readers, who say, oh, I've read everything that Agatha Christie wrote, and I say, well, what did you think of the play, The Unexpected Guest? And they often say, oh, I didn't know she wrote plays, but she did. And some of them are originals. And even more interesting than that is when she adapted some of her novels for the stage, she changed the murderer. So
amazing.
You can read the same story with two different endings, both written by Agatha Christie. So her plays are fascinating in their own right.
Well,
so
I'll tell you, John.
As well, and then she wrote two volumes of autobiography and a volume of poetry. So she was unique, literally, in the meaning of the word. She was a one-off. There will never be, and there never has been, another Agatha Christie.
I agree with that. We've been talking with John Curran in Ireland. His book, Agatha Christie, Murder in the Making, More Stories and Secrets from Her Notebooks. John, what is the website people can go to find out more about your writings, your books?
It's www.johncurran.info, I-N-F-O.
Okay, John Curran, and that's C-U-R-R-A-N, info.
Dot com. Yes, dot info. Yeah.
Oh, dot info. John Curran.
Dot info, yeah.
Dot info. Okay, John Curran.
Dot info. Because we have a politician here with the same name as myself, so we don't want confusion about that.
There we go. Well, John, this has been delightful. Thank you for staying up until the wee hours of the morning to be
not
with us today. And it's just been a joy.
Thank you very much, Donna.
It's a pleasure having you. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. If you like Agatha Christie, you're not going to want to miss this, Murder in the Making by John Curran. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Tickets now on sale for the 2012 Conscious Life Expo, February 10th through the 13th at the LAX Hilton. Bringing together an eclectic community of speakers, panelists, exhibitors, artists, and visionaries for a four-day gathering of collective consciousness featuring over 150 workshops, special events, including TV British psychic Lisa Williams and visionary scientist and author Greg Braden, as well as the film festival, live music, Programa Latino, and three exhibit halls packed with healthy products and services. For ticket information, www.consciouslifeexpo.com.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I know we've got a caller on the line. I'll be going to that caller in just a moment. And telephone lines are open. You, like the lady that I'm going to be talking to in just a moment, you can call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Let me give you that toll-free number, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Let's show you how we do this on the Donna Sebo Show. And remember, you can call in and even ask a question if you like. Let's go to our first caller for the day. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
I'm calling in from Florida.
Where in Florida, dear?
In Naples.
In Naples, Florida. Beautiful area. Beautiful area. All right. And your name, please, or initial?
S.
Okay. S, the first thing I'm looking at in my mind, I'm seeing you in front of a computer screen, and you're analyzing something that's there. I'm wondering if it's some kind of a form. It doesn't look like something you have composed, and you're a bit frustrated, and I want to say, stop the frustration, pick up the phone, and call somebody to find out what it is that you need to have clarity on relative to this form, because it will present some major problems for you if it's not done correctly. It's sort of like any other computerized situation. If an error is made, it will take forever and you know what to be able to get it done and revised the way it should be. So take the time to really find out what you need to know. Better to spend that extra time, even though it's frustrating to you, than to not have it done properly. Also, I feel as if there is a lot of work in front of you this year. You are moving forward into a new dimension of professional application. And this is going to require from you a development of a diplomatic side of yourself that you have not yet cultivated, because you really haven't had a need to cultivate it, but it is coming along. Making money, saving money this year is going to be very much on the top of your priority list, and you're going to be able to do a good job. It's being absolutely consistent with it that it's going to be necessary for you to reach the objectives you want to reach. So the consistency must be there. What question would you like to ask me today, Sally?
I'm needing to make a move, and I saw a place that is number 8 in an area, and I just wondered if that felt like the right place.
I'm not so sure that it is, and the number in my mind doesn't have anything to do with it. What I'm looking at is that you must determine, because apparently money is, and the managing of money is going to be very important to you this year. The move that you feel that you've got to make, you want to make an assessment about the area that you really want to be in and the economic positioning you want to be in, so that you're not going to feel undue stress. If you take and evaluate things accordingly, I believe you're going to have actually a choice of 3 different places. So you don't need to compromise yourself at all. Really be aware of what it is that you want and think it through. Is this a place that you're going to want to stay in for a while, or is this something that you anticipate maybe within a year you're going to want to move again? So there's a lot of things to be worked out here, and I think you need to remember you should have an environment that it makes you feel just totally, totally at peace when you're in it, because you're going to be spending a lot of time in your place, and you want to be aware that when you are in it, you're going to have that sense of just total rejuvenation when you're in it.
Okay, well, the place is not exactly what we needed and would need some building, you know, added building, and I just wondered if that would be the right course. But you
I'm
said
not
we're
excited
have
about that. I'm looking at you working so much. If you took on the project, you really need to sit down and look at it. How big a place are we talking about?
It's called a villa. It's like a it's not quite a single family home. You take care of what's in within your walls, not what's outside. So that's my choice. I'd rather have that than have to take care of property on the outside.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want you to check around, though. I really want you to ask yourself and really read the fine print that's going to be in the contract so that you really understand the pluses and minuses. I'm not excited about this place. I'm really not. I'd like you to keep your eyes open. Do you have a time deadline?
No.
Then I would look until you really find what you want, because you've got a buyer's market today. You don't need to stress yourself out over this.
Okay, and then we have a place to sell. Will that go okay?
Actually, I think when you're ready to move, it will sell quickly, because the place that you're in, you're going to be tweaking it, doing little things that just will make it so pristine that when someone moves in, they're not going to have to do anything. So it's just going to be absolutely wonderful for people. So I think when you're ready to put it up on the market, that you're going to have a buyer. But I really would like for you to shop around more and not compromise. You really need to have a place that is what you want, and not one that you're going to have to put a whole bunch of money in to bring up to what it is that you want, because you're really not even going to be satisfied then.
Okay. Thank
you
very much.
I hope that helped you.
Hello?
Hello, yes, we have a bit of a time delay on the line. So
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right. It's not your fault. It's not my fault. It's just what happens sometimes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Donna.
Oh, you're more than welcome. I appreciate your call. This is Donna Sebo.
Okay.
Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. 888-627-6008 is the telephone number to call into. Well, I want to let you know who's going to be on the air with me this week. We're going to be talking with Jeffrey Abigail. Now, this is a man who has walked a journey of personal experience that really he felt he needed to write about so that people would not feel alone after going through certain experiences which were similar to his. The book is titled Stranger to Myself, and it is really quite an interesting read, and how sometimes drugs, alcohol, can affect someone, and I would say it affects the energy body of the individual so dramatically. They have experiences that are with them for the rest of their lives. So we're going to be talking about that tomorrow. Then we're going to be talking with a man who played in Vegas. His name is Gary Nassif. It's Stop Crying and Listen to the Music. We'll be playing a little bit of his music, but also we'll be hearing a man's story about how he managed to overcome a tremendous handicap to be on stage and to be around well-known celebrities around the world. And then Innovation for the 21st Century, Michael Karmer is going to be my guest, or actually Carrier is his last name. I apologize for mispronouncing it. He is a man that's doing a lot of research on how you protect yourself with intellectual property. So we're going to be talking about that. And then on Friday, get financing now. Is this something that you need? Are you being challenged? Well, we're going to have Charles Green on the show, as well as having, as a second guest on Friday, Cliff Fazzolari. And his short interview that we're going to have is about his brother. And he wrote a book saying, Oh Brother, Lifetimes of Jeff Fazzolari. Fascinating paranormal experiences he had relative to his brother. So we've got a great lineup of people this week, and I hope you'll join me. I'm going to express my appreciation to the people at the Ascension for Life Foundation. We had a wonderful turnout on Saturday, and they just did an awesome job. It was an absolute delight to be a speaker, and we will have some events that are going to be coming up relative to my speaking there again, and I'll be sure and let those of you that are listening that are in Western Washington know so that you'll know what's coming up. What is coming up this weekend is my wonderful, wonderful class, Quantum Mind 2. I am so pleased to be doing this. We are almost full. So if you or a friend are interested in being a part of this wonderful class, I want you to get in touch with me. Call me at my office, 253-582-5604. It is being held at Bridgeport Place, and that is in University Place. It's a community that is very easy to find, and it's going to be from 10 to 4. The price is $59.95, and this is going to be an interactive class. The first portion of the class is going to be done by Robert Newman, who is a feng shui specialist, and the second part of the class is going to be done by me. We're all about empowering you for this new year, 2012, so we invite you to join us. So give me a call if you'd like to be a part of this class and you're in Western Washington. 253-582-5604 is the telephone number to call. Like I said, we've only got a few open seats left. I'm so excited, really looking forward to this phenomenal event. Well, quickly, well, I know we're going to take a break. So when we come back from the break, I'm going to share a Chinese horoscope with you. And this is going to be for the people that are under the year of the rooster and then the year of the dog. So we're going to be talking about that. And, well, there's a few other things I'm going to be sharing with you as well. So don't go away. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back in a moment. Call-in number is 888-627-6008. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me. Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny. They will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Okay, let's get the Chinese horoscope for those of you born under the sign of Rooster. Now, by the way, for those of you that are tuning in at this time and maybe missed some previous shows, we have gone and taken care of the sign of the dragon, the snake, the horse, the sheep, and the monkey. So I want to get to the rooster and the dog today. Now, the rooster, it's your year of birth that makes the difference with Chinese astrology. If you were born in 1933, 45, 57, 69, 81, 93, or 2005, you come under the sign of the rooster. Now, you're a person that really likes to stand up for what is right. You are very, very efficient. You are diligent, you're meticulous in all you do, and you have a strong sense of confidence and usually quite a bit of energy. Now, you need to realize that it's time to clean out the old this year in 2012 to make space for what you really want in your life. And you are going to be focusing on money quite a bit. You're going to want to make sure you're out of debt to the best of your capacity and taking care of some other things as well. So this is going to be quite a dynamic year for those of you under the sign of Rooster, and you are going to be amazed at things if you pay attention to your intuition, how you're going to be in the right place at the right time for what it is you need in your life. Now, for those of you born under the sign of the dog, that's the year 1934, 46, 58, 70, 82, 94, and 2006. Well, the symbol of the dog always represents trustworthiness and loyalty, and you love to work just as hard as you play. It seems like that's just a pattern you have, and you really do enjoy life, and you're very compassionate. You like to assist others. You like to be a part of something that's bigger than yourself, where you feel like you're contributing value into life. And your home is going to be very important to you this year. You may want to do some remodeling. You might want to do some painting. It's as if you really want to pay attention to your home environment and the quality of the environment that you have. So this is going to be very important to you. And I would just say, you just need to know that family relationships, though testy at times, you're going to find you're going to be able to enjoy people. And people depend on you because they like your openness and, in many respects, your easygoing nature. So you just need to remember, don't let people walk all over you. Being trustworthy, being loyal, all of that is wonderful, but don't become a doormat for somebody else. Well, that's the Chinese horoscope signs. Now, what I've got left, I've got the sign of the rabbit, year of the rabbit, the year of the tiger, ox, rat, and pig. So those are the ones that we're going to be finishing up this week. Here in the Pacific Northwest, the weather is absolutely gorgeous right now. We've had serious power outages because we had a bitter cold front that came through. Lots of trees gone down. We were out every day, Victor and I, walking. And it was amazing to see the transformation just in a matter of 3 days, going from rain, the mild rain, to then very bitter cold, a lot of snow, and then watching how this dissipates when another front comes in, it raises the temperatures up so that everything's melting. And then you have all of the drama of trees cracking and huge boughs falling into the road and all kinds of things. It makes for a very interesting experience. I still think it's one of the most beautiful places on the planet to live, and I really do love the Pacific Northwest. I thought I'd share a little bit of something about the CIA. Yes, this is really interesting, and it has to do with some files that supposedly were to have been destroyed, but they weren't. Now, this took place in 1973, and the CIA destroyed most of its files on what they called the MK Ultra Project. However, somehow or another, a batch of them were not destroyed. Now, these files were made accessible to Congress, and the public learned as well that for years the CIA had been experimenting with drugs on innocent people many times. And to test LSD, the CIA had set up both secret operations and academic fronts. And they established a Society for the Investigation of Human Ecology at the Cornell University Medical School, which dispensed grants to institutions in the U.S. and Canada to conduct experiments with LSD. And the LSD project was actually administered by the CIA's technical services staff. It was a very open, freewheeling atmosphere in which anyone was likely to be dosed without warning, in the name of research. Thousands of people were involuntarily dosed. Now, there was an operation in San Francisco. It had its code name Midnight Climax. And this is something that you'd expect in a James Bond movie or some super spy movie. There were prostitutes that brought men to bordellos that were actually CIA safe houses. And they'd spike the men's drinks once they were inside the bordellos. And when they were affected, the CIA operatives would observe, photograph, and record everything that came about because of being administered this drug. And there was an experiment where black inmates at the Lexington Narcotics Hospital were given LSD for 75 consecutive days and gradually decreasing doses. The U.S. Army was also involved in these experiments. All kinds of records that had supposedly been destroyed were found. And the Army also was involved in this. They made a film of troops trying to drill while tripping on acid. Eventually, the government had to come clean and said that LSD had been given to about 1,000 unsuspecting people from 1955 to 58 and paid millions of dollars to settle lawsuits that were filed when subjects given drugs became permanently incapacitated or committed suicide. Fascinating details. All documented. This is Donna Sebo. It's been a delight sharing this time with you. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Never give your mind over to anybody else. Be aware that you are in control of how you're going to make your life a richer experience. And you're the one that takes the responsibility for doing it. This is Donna Sebo. Talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.